back here on Latter-day Radio on 1430 KLO World Class Talk. And I'm with Jonathan Neville. And we're continuing our conversation about church history, Book of Mormon lands, and where did these things take place. Now, last segment, we talked about a couple of different books you've written. One is Letter 7, The Explanation. The other is Whatever Happened to the Golden Plates. But you've got another focus here on another book you've published, talking about This is the Place. And we're not talking about Brigham Young and right. Arriving in the Valley, but rather Mormons America. Where did all of these things actually take place? Give us kind of a little background. How did these things coalesce in your own mind that you seem fairly convinced of your position? How did you come to these conclusions?
Well, I approached it really kind of using a scientific method, because as I mentioned earlier, for 30 years I believed in the Mesoamerican theory, and I accepted kind of the standard interpretations. And when I realized that the prophets have all taught Camorras in New York, and I believe the prophets, I thought, how does that fit with the geography? And so my wife was reading the Book of Mormon, and she made a list of 300 passages that refer to the geography, and she wanted to know where they all took place.
Well, that's a big assignment.
I know.
It was on your Saturday to-do list.
Exactly. And I had to do that before I took the trash out, you know. So I thought, I took it on as a project. I thought that people have been writing dozens of different geographies. John Sorensen did a great book kind of showing all the different theories. And I thought there's got to be a way to approach this that makes sense, that corroborates what the prophets have said.
So she sent you off, and then she went shopping and did what you wanted because you were out of her hair for a while. Was that it?
Pretty much. Let's just leave it that way. it took a while, and there were some issues, you know, as I went through it. But I wanted to approach it from the beginning, fresh, with no preconceptions other than Camorra being in New York. And so I started with First Nephi. I went through the whole thing, and I made notes of alternative ways to interpret the text. And not just assuming that one way was the way to do it. Part of this was that I have some background. I used to study Greek and Latin, and there's a famous book in Greek called The Anabasis, where they talk about a war, and he describes the geography. And if you didn't have a map, you would never know what he was talking about. And we don't have a map for the Book of Mormon. It's the same way with the Bible. If you read the Bible and you don't refer to the Bible maps, but you try to draw your own map based on what they say in the Bible, you're clueless. You'll never come up with what we know to be Jerusalem and Egypt and all that, just because the directions are so vague. And the Book of Mormon is similar. So there are some specific geographical indicators, but even those are somewhat, they're subject to various interpretations. For example,
narrow neck of land.
Yeah, everybody asks me, where's the narrow neck of land? And I always say it's in Ether 1020, because that's the only place it is in the whole book. And everybody thinks that the small neck, the narrow passage, the narrow pass, and the narrow neck are all the same as a narrow neck of land. And my approach was to say, well, Mormon used different terms for each of those. I'm going to assume those are all different places. Even the narrow neck is different from the narrow neck of land. That's why he put of land as a qualifier for narrow neck in Ether 1020. So when you approach that, it opens up a lot of more opportunities or variety of possibilities, let's say. So I started going through it, and I went back from Camorra. I said, okay, if Camorra's in New York, where were the Nephites and so on backing up? And then I also had in the back of my mind this idea that Lehi crossed the Atlantic. And that makes so much sense, partly because there's a Phoenicia ship that gives us a historical precedent, shows how it was done. There's also the Mulekites had to cross the Atlantic, and even the Mesoamerican advocates agree with that. Christopher Columbus crossed the Atlantic the same way. And if you look at how the winds and the currents are, all three of those groups, the Mulekites, the Lehi's group, and Columbus, all essentially follow the same place. They go down to the Canary Islands for the Mulekites and Columbus. Lehi would have gone up the west coast of Africa, roughly to the Canary Islands, and then they all come over the same way. That's how Nephi, when he had his vision, he saw Columbus crossing the same route that he had crossed. That's how he recognized it was the Promised Land.
Mm-hmm.
So based on that, I assumed, okay, he probably landed somewhere in Florida, let's say. And from there, Nephi says that he went up, he left his brethren, he went up to a higher area that he called the land of Nephi, city of Nephi, which I think is in Tennessee, Chattanooga area. A little interesting sidelight of that is, as I was working on a map here, I thought to myself, well, how would Lehi escape into the wilderness? Because if he was hacking his way through the jungle in Central America or the forest in southeastern United States, it'd be easy to follow him. So the only way he could escape into the wilderness was going on a river. If you're going upstream on a river and there's all these tributaries coming down, you can lose your pursuers real fast because they won't know which tributary you went up.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way it made sense for me that he could escape is going up a river. And I found a river on the map that looked plausible to me, and I kind of marked it off. And then I thought to myself, I wonder what the name of this river was, because I was using a map of the topography that didn't have any names on it. And the name of the river was the Flint River. And if you remember, when he left his brothers, he said that their hearts were hard as flint. And it occurred to me that he was using that metaphor because he was on a river that had flint. And that's what made him think of it. Anyway, so he went up to Tennessee area, Chattanooga area. There's Lookout Mountain, and there's an enormous archaeological reserve right in downtown Chattanooga that's a federally protected land that they don't have the funds to explore. But I've walked through it myself, and it's full of artifacts. And there's, you can even see traces of mounds and things in there. So, and there's other museums and things in the area that have artifacts that date to Book of Mormon time period. So it's a nice fit. And then I thought, well, just as an experiment, in Doctrine and Covenants 125, it's the Lord told Joseph Smith to build a city across from Nauvoo, across the river from Nauvoo, on the west side of the Mississippi River, and to name it Zarahemla. Now, it does not say that that was the ancient Zarahemla, but it does say to name it Zarahemla. And I thought that was really interesting because in the Book of Mormon and in the Doctrine and Covenants, it talks about the New Jerusalem. And what does the Lord say about the New Jerusalem, or Ether, when he was explaining it to Coriantumr? He says, it wasn't Jerusalem because that was the Jerusalem in the old world. This was a New Jerusalem, so they called it the New Jerusalem. The Lord did not tell Joseph Smith to call it the New Zarahemla. He said to call it Zarahemla. And to me, that's a strong indication that that was the ancient Zarahemla. Well, but it's not a sure thing. So I just plugged it into my map to see if it would fit. And then, you know, one of the things we talk about in Book of Mormon geography is the River Sidon and how, whether it flows north or south and all that stuff. And I thought, okay, it does make sense that when Mosiah went down to Zarahemla, he went down a river, and it was a north-flowing river because Zarahemla was north of the land of Nephi. But where is there a north-flowing river in North America? And it turns out there's a north-flowing river called the Tennessee River that nobody ever seemed to have thought about, because it goes right from the Chattanooga area, up, it goes north but down. In other words, Chattanooga is higher in elevation.
Elevation, it's going down.
Yeah, the elevation in Chattanooga is high. It's up in the Appalachian Mountains, kind of. And it goes downstream, but it flows north to the Ohio River, where it meets Illinois. And southern I consider all of Illinois the land of Zarahemla. So Mosiah could go down from the city of Nephi, the land of Nephi, down to Zarahemla on a north-flowing river, and it fits perfectly.
Hmm.
The distinction is between the land of Zarahemla and the city of Zarahemla. If you read the text carefully, you realize there was no city of Zarahemla until you get into the Alma, the Book of Alma. So throughout Mosiah, the people did not have a city of Zarahemla. They had a land of Zarahemla. But we don't know exactly where that those events took place, other than that they were in the land of Zarahemla along the Sidon River. So this all started coming together, and I thought, this is incredible. It surpassed my expectations for the geography. And then we got into the issue of the West Sea, and no one could find a West Sea that fit this geography. And so I looked it up. You know, as a lawyer, I always wanted to define terms. So I looked up in Strong's Hebrew Concordance, what does the word sea mean as it's translated in the Bible? And it gave a list of examples. It had the Sea of Galilee, the Red Sea, the Mediterranean Sea, and then it said a mighty river, and it used the Nile River. And it turns out that both Isaiah and Nahum were translated, they used the word sea for the Nile River. And so the Hebrew connotation there is it refers to a large body of water, including a mighty river. So where is there a mighty river around the Mississippi The Mississippi River is the mighty river that was called a sea. But you have to make a distinction. It was the lower Mississippi after the Ohio River comes in. This is kind of confusing if you're not looking at a map. And we have a detailed map book of all this if you're interested. It's Modernized America, the Maps Edition. That has about 100 pages of detailed maps explaining all this. But the point is that the lower Mississippi anciently was part of the Gulf of Mexico. And over the eons, or at least hundreds, thousands of years, the upper rivers, the Missouri, Mississippi, and Ohio, brought so much silt down that they filled it in. Now it looks like a river. But right on Google Earth, you can see that it used to be part of the Gulf of Mexico. So to me, that made sense as a sea west. And there's even a verse in Alma. I won't cite chapter and verse right now. You can look it up. But a verse in Alma that refers to the West Sea South, which tells me there is also a West Sea North. And that fits into all this geography really well. So obviously talking about geography is a long topic, but what I'm trying to say here is that the descriptions in the text fit the North American setting perfectly, or at least, let's say, very well, because there can always be differences of opinion about what a particular term means, but the overall geography fits perfectly, and it works so well with the teachings of the prophets about America being the promised land, President Romney's comment about America's destiny, which focused on the Hill Cumorah in New York. All these things fit so well that it was hard for me to actually believe that it fit so well, because I didn't expect that.
That's what we call the good news, right?
Yeah, it's awesome.
Good news of the gospel.
You know, I always come back to this. I emphasize that the only thing we know for sure is the Hill Cumorah is in New York. Everything else is subject to our own study with archaeology, anthropology, geology, geography, the words of the text, and so on. And there's lots of possibilities that we should all be open to. I'm open to anybody's idea. I just insist that the Hill Cumorah is in New York because I believe the prophets.
Well, and I think it's important for us to, if we want to really believe the prophets, read the book that is the keystone of our religion, which is the Book of Mormon, right, which is the genesis for all of these discussions anyway. Jonathan, thank you so much. You've been listening to Latter-day Radio here on 1430 KLO World Class Talk. We'll be back after these messages.